Greetings! You are listening to We Own This Town Music, a podcast dedicated to showcasing new and notable music from Nashville and surrounding areas. I'm your host, Michael Eads, and this is volume 165. This week, we're going to switch it up a little bit and go against a little bit of what I said there in the intro, but we'll get to those details in just a second. This show is brought to you by We Own This Town, a network of podcasts all hosted by Nashville residents that casts a wide net in terms of subject matter of each show. There's actually a ton of good stuff to listen to on the network, and they're publishing new content very regularly. You can find all of that at weownthistown.net or in your favorite podcast app. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, you name it. If they got podcasts, they got us. So look up We Own This Town and follow along. If you're feeling extra generous, maybe give us a review, a favorable one, preferably. You can also follow along on all the social networks at We Own This Town on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We post notices about new episodes and other miscellaneous updates there. It's a real blast. Social media is a real blast. So, as I mentioned, this week we're going to switch it up a little bit. I've been enjoying these dives into new releases and upcoming releases and interesting discoveries for the past few episodes, but this week I wanted to try something a bit different and put our We Own This Town Music thesis statement to the test. So we believe that Nashville has so much more to offer than country music, music row, honky-tonks. There's nothing inherently wrong with any of those things, but they pigeonhole us into being something we absolutely are not. There's a lot of music scenes here that are very strong and exist way outside those bubbles. I mean, just this year, we've seen huge strides in the hip-hop and pop communities. It's a far cry from what the outside world thinks of Nashville. It's not a problem that's unique to Nashville, but it's one that's particularly sharp here because Nashville is country music, USA. So while hip-hop and pop are getting their comeuppance right now, a variety of music from outside of the stereotype of Nashville has long existed. So, this week, we're going to take a little trip down memory lane and play some tracks from Nashville's past that help us to confirm that notion that we're more than country. This episode isn't going to be some overly researched history lesson. It's just some songs from the past that I've really enjoyed and think you will as well. That being said, there's a Nashville Scene article by Tracy Moore that was published back in 2006 that was extremely helpful in framing a lot of this stuff. And a website called Nashville80sRock.net, a wonderful URL that was very insightful and actually houses a bunch of old publications from the early 80s that were scanned in. Unbelievably insightful. I'll link all of that on the detail page for this episode. But let's just do it. Let's just go back a ways and listen to some music that has helped define Nashville outside of that country music row honky-tonk stereotype. Let's dive in with a track from 1968.
Hide and seek a rose in your garden. Can you find yourself? Hide and seek a rose in your garden. Can you find yourself? Hide and seek a rose in your garden. Can you find yourself? Hide and seek a rose in your garden. Can you find yourself? Can you?
Pain.
Hide and Seek from The Feminine Complex off of the 1996 reissue, Livin' Love. We've played The Feminine Complex on the show before, but it really never gets old. This all-female quartet formed as friends at Maplewood High School in 1966 as The Pivots, and later changed their name in 1967. The album was recorded with a bunch of session musicians, but there are original demo tapes out there as well if you're interested. Nashville musician Jonathan Marks happened upon this album one day in the early 90s and took it upon himself to research the origins and get the album reissued, which is why we're listening to a track from the 1996 reissue of the original. He talks a great deal about this process over on an episode of My Fantasy Funeral, one of our fellow We Own This Town podcasts. So if you want a little bit more in-depth insight into the process of how this came to be, go give that episode a listen. So this song and another track called I've Been Working On You were both top 40 hits in Nashville, and I mean, deservedly so. The other track, I've Been Working On You, we played on a prior episode of this show, so I went with Hide and Seek this go-round, and it's phenomenal. It's like psychedelic and a bit ominous, and it just soars there at the end. I love it. The original album, Livin' Love, is just 11 tracks, but all of the digital reissues that I've seen are 22 tracks. And stylistically, it covers a lot of ground. Some really fantastic upbeat R&B jams, some light ballads, and the occasional psych rock track like Hide and Seek. It is absolutely worth hearing in its entirety. And it's conveniently streaming on all of the platforms. So this is a great first entry in our look at the diverse history of Nashville. Let's see if we can keep this going. And we're going to go with a band that you really can't avoid when you're talking about Nashville history.
As the sun slides down and the children going walk both sides of life. And they asked me who I am, a prisoner of war to be, or a prophet that is damned. And I only knew which way to flew when the walls of Moses broke. A God that sees waits for all these who will die before they'll close. But she said, black and white, the morning don't bring night. The two steps out your dam for all time to walk both sides of life.
That was Jason and the Scorchers with Both Sides of the Line off of their 1983 EP, Fervor, released via Praxis Records. They are considered the originators of, quote, cowpunk, a blending of some country sensibilities, a bit of punk, and a lot of good old rock and roll. It's really impossible to read about the history of Nashville music in the early 80s without the fruits of your research being mostly dominated by Jason and the Scorchers. They were incredibly popular in town and had a live show that many would call legendary. There's an anecdote in that Nashville Scene article I mentioned where frontman Jason Ringenberg scaled a billboard outside of Cats Music on West End in 1982, brought traffic to a halt with the spectacle, and ended up smashing a mic into his mouth, leaving him bloody as he climbed down. The song itself might not feel like it now in 2019, but it was very different for Nashville in the early 80s. There was a punk irreverence to the whole thing that made it hard to ignore. It also helped that the band embraced some of the Nashville stereotypes, like wearing Western wear and having a slight twang, which created a real disconnect between their look and their sound. Ultimately, that dissonance did work against them. They did get signed to EMI and toured a great deal, and they were played on MTV, but country radio wouldn't play them because they were too rock and roll, and rock and roll radio wouldn't play them because they were too country. They just never broke in the way that folks expected them to. For a lot of people, Jason and the Scorchers is one of the first examples of the quote-unquote Nashville curse. Bands with a lot of hype and expectations around them that just never quite make it over that hump. There's a lot of history here with Jason and the Scorchers that goes into like original punk venues in Nashville, the underground scene with a phenomenal batch of bands that I can't possibly cover in one tiny between song segment. But Jason and the Scorchers did break up for a while. They reformed. They put out more albums. They continue to hold a special place in the history of Nashville. So go give that Scene article a read. It's lengthy and gives some great context and framing around this whole affair. Fun bonus fact, that song, Both Sides of the Line, was co-written by Michael Stipe of REM, with whom the bands were friends. He also sings backup vocals on another track on that EP. That's it. That's just a little factoid that you should know and keep in your brain. All right, on to something you may not have heard.
I don't have to lie. I can feel the tension. Words aren't always right, but the music's always loud. Standing all alone, do you wanna dance? But I can take you home for a wild romance with me. With me. Living at night.
Living at Night by Walk the West from 1986. At the time, Walk the West was heavily considered the next in line to receive all sorts of fanfare in the way that Jason and the Scorchers were. This particular song feels like it's heavily influenced by the likes of The Cult's Love. Unlikely, but it's a decent touch point stylistically for me to reference here on the show and for you to understand what I'm talking about. A good half of the record sounds that way. It's a bit darker, a bit more melancholy. The other half leans more into that cowpunk style. So where the Scorchers were leaning into rock tendencies, Walk the West was leaning into some of the more gothic and darker bands of the time. But they both had that kind of underlying country thing going on there. Just a pinch of that country. It's a really interesting fusion for sure, and it's kind of one of my favorite discoveries of this episode. Band leader Paul Kirby passed away back in 2011. But the band actually reformed in 2019 with Joe Blanton on vocals and played a show at the Basement with appearances by Bobby Bear Jr. and Mike Grimes. Mike Grimes himself. I'm sure it was a cathartic and joyous occasion. I highly recommend seeking out this record. It's actually streaming on Spotify and other streaming services, so you should have no problem diving into more of it. The darker bits of it are really fascinating and enjoyable. So that's what I got on Walk the West. Let's keep digging.
Another picture comes into view. Becomes a fixture. It waits for you. Go to the window. Pull up the shade. You think of yesterday. You should have stayed.
Thank you.
was the band Actuals with the song Today. This track comes from a 2008 compilation from Spat Records called Return to Elliston Square, 1979 to 1989, that features a ton of local bands from that era. It's streaming on Spotify, and it really is a must-listen if you're at all interested in the Nashville underground during that particular decade. A lot of the music on that compilation is very new wave and punk-inspired, but this track feels a little different, more art-punky. I know those Venn diagrams heavily overlap, but there's just something about it. Obviously, there's some clear parallels here with the sound coming from the Talking Heads out of New York around the same time, 1979, 1980. Given that the first Talking Heads record was in 77, it is entirely possible the Actuals were directly influenced by their sound. It's not a bad thing. It's honestly a great track. I wish I could find more. Actuals broke up at the end of 1980, but reformed as Factuals in 1982, and then later reformed again as Actuals, spelled with an E instead of an A. I can't really find a ton more information about the album or EP or whatever this song was attached to, but I'm certainly going to keep scrounging around for more because I really would love to hear whatever this was attached to. I was able to find that drummer John Elliott released a good bit of music under the name DeSaw, working with producer Martin Hannett, Steve Albini, and Ministry's Al Jorgensen, and that music falls more into the dance floor genre and a bit of industrial. I mean, honestly, 100% not something you would associate with Nashville. All of this is shockingly not Nashville, which is why we're here, and I'm loving it. Both Factuals and DeSaw and Actuals are included on that compilation that I mentioned, which will absolutely be linked on the episode detail page. It's a big comp, and every bit of it is worth listening to. Okay, let's get a bit more modern.
He has a hand and feet pocket guide. Cal is it with him in case he needs to use it sometimes. She has pain in the feet, pain in her heart. Will they ever meet? Will they read the chart?
Was Rub Her Right from Trauma Team. The self-titled album is often marked as being released in 2003, but I'm pretty sure that is incorrect. The band formed around 1996 with Laurel Parton serving as vocalist and primary songwriter. The band is still active, and their Facebook page has a ton of old flyers from that era showing them playing shows with Dave Cloud's Gospel of Power, Daphne's Operation, Glossary, Lamb Chop, and Kill Devil Hills. If most of those band names sound as foreign to you as Trauma Team, you were not attending Middle Tennessee State University in the late 90s like I was. Trauma Team's record is streaming on Spotify and still functions quite well as a snarling, empowered bit of rock and roll. Bands like Forget Cassettes were directly inspired by Trauma Team and, dare I say, helped pave the way for bands like Be Your Own Pet or Idlebloom. I mean, all those bands succeed on their own merits, but Trauma Team helped establish for Nashville what a proper female-fronted rock band was capable of. That's not to minimize the efforts of bands like Raging Fire in the late 80s or Feminine Complex in the 60s, but there wasn't quite the same vibe in those cases. So go give Trauma Team a listen and remember the era of the late 90s being filled with the likes of Liz Phair, Poe, PJ Harvey, Hole, Garbage, or Veruca Salt. It all fits right in, and it's Nashville music. Proud moment. All right, let's round out the show with a little treat. Was Armani Suede from The Features off their very first EP released in 1997 on Spongebath Records. If you have been around the Nashville music scene, you've likely listened to The Features. They put out their last album, Sunset Rock, in 2016, and four full-length albums prior to that. They were an incredibly tight band that managed to infuse a lot of influences, like Kink-style pop to krautrock to big anthem-style sing-alongs, without ever feeling derivative. I'd venture to say that at one point, they were Nashville's most favored local band, and I fall right into that camp. Love them to death. But before all that, there was this Features EP. I was in high school when this was released and saw the band actually play at Rocket Town when it was in Franklin. I don't know why I was at Rocket Town. I think I specifically went to see the Features because they were all the buzz. And at that time, they would do a little synchronized dance move during one of their songs. I think it was Your Smile. Not this song, but if you want to see such dance moves, there is a full performance from 1996 when they played at Exit Inn. It's downright adorable. But more than just being cute, it really shows that the band was something special even then. I know I'm biased because I've been listening to them for some 20-odd years, and they were a part of my formative years of listening to music, but the Features really were something great. I can't back it up any more than that. They're just fantastic. Seek this out on YouTube if you can. I'll link the performance at Exit Inn. I'm sure you can find the EP also on YouTube. Pretty much any music you ever want to find is on YouTube in some kind of bootleg form, one way or another. But that's all I got for us this week in terms of our little trip down memory lane. I hope you liked it. With six songs present, we obviously didn't cover even a tenth of a fraction of the city's history, but I hope we can all agree that Nashville's been a bit more diverse for a long time than it gets credit for. So find us at weownthistown.net or at weownthistown on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Send us some old stuff, things that we missed, please. The music bed for this show is from Upright T-Rex Music. Find them at uprighttrexmusic.com. Thank you so much for listening. I'll talk at you next time. Bye.